From time to time, I ask members of the congregation to talk a little bit about work that they see God doing or that they're participating in beyond the walls of our congregation. And so we've had people talk about what they're doing around getting diapers for children, for example, or other kinds of things where God is alive in the world and you, the members of this congregation, see that work and participate in that work. Tonight, we're going to talk about the ways that God is alive in the world right here at Montclair Presbyterian Church. And to come and talk to us about that is Lori Kendall. Lori has been a member of this church for quite some time, longer, of course, than I've been here. This is Lori's last Sunday with us. And I'm going to miss Lori greatly, and I know you are too, and I think sometimes we don't realize how important we are as a congregation. We don't remember to think about what a strong impact we can have on one another. And so I asked Lori to talk to you about the things that God has done in the world and in her life here at Montclair Presbyterian Church. So Lori, come forward.
I also recognize the wisdom of me being between you and dinner. So I'll endeavor to keep this pretty brief. So this is my home church, and you're my family in Christ. In early 2001, I came for the flag, but I stayed for the company. And this is where I encountered the divine and a conception of God far from the old stern man with the long flowing robes in the clouds, the God of my evangelical American Baptist youth. And I don't really know where that long flowing dude comes from, but there you go. I'm just happy to be sitting next to another Baptist. You know, I met up with divinity here. God as he, as she, or without pronouns, all together. God is one, God is three, Father, Mother, Son, Aunt. And the way we worship and celebrate here, I don't really know that we've had a chance to fully explain this to Ann and Ben. But, you know, some of my fondest memories are riding a motorcycle down the aisle with Earl Hamlin as Karen, right down to the coconut for the bra and the grass skirt. As we sent her off to her sabbatical, I got married here to my lovely wife, the first of three times, because that's how long it took for it to legally stick. Right, Tisa? And thank goodness for a patient pastor who kept doing it, daring the presbytery to come after her. And one of my fondest memories, of course, is reprising as my alter ego, Betty Barker, the long-lost cousin to Dolly Parton, while jiggling a set of handcuffs, leering at Karen's husband, Chandler. Does Anne know about this? No. See, we get a little wacky here. So this is a good home. This is a good place to land. And I hope that my gay and lesbian brothers and sisters who have departed these walls, mostly for reasons related to the hurtful or at least glacial pace of change in the larger church, find a way to come back. I know you'll welcome them. I'm counting on you to do that. So a little bit about me. Number one is I'm by nature a seeker. I was baptized at 12. I left my church at 18 when I came out. It was clear that the teachings were incompatible with who I was. I didn't want any part of a God who said, who my church said was punishing gays by sending the modern plague, which became known as the AIDS epidemic. While I marched in my youth and worked as an activist in the early days of the gay civil rights movement, I continued to look for God, but she was a little hard to find then. I studied up on the clobber passages. We know them. We've talked about them here in these rooms. Of Genesis, Leviticus, Romans, Timothy, and others. But thanks to the voices of you, the voices of the pastors that we've had come through these walls, and the voices of Walter Wink and John Boswell and others, I came to believe although my voice and your voice was a tiny minority, mainstream Christianity was wrong. And so I became active in PFLAG, and this was during the time in Southern California. I went into a lot of hostile church congregations with my straight allies, and I started telling my story. And the years flew by, and by the time I landed here, I guess I kind of gave up on changing anyone for a while. But I came with the woman who became my wife, and I know that I got the better end of the deal. And the first couple weeks after we moved here, we saw the flag. And so the rest, you might say, for my tenure and my time with you here at Montclair is history. I jumped in with both feet, active in More Light, stage productions, being on session, being clerk of session for a while, but you know, let's get to the good stuff. So what I learned. For those of you who don't know what I do, because we do actually a really great job of not talking about it here, I was a high-tech corporate manager and an executive for Fortune 500 companies and startups that I co-founded. And I used to think that that business is business and personal is personal. I kept my life pretty neatly divided. All that stuff that I just talked about, I kept that out of work, especially anything about religion, about God, and about spirituality. In my work, I was a pretty typical alpha female, pushing and shoving my way to the top, at least that's what I thought I wanted. And I know most of you don't know this, but in 2004, I co-founded a company that made it really easy to export jobs. Yeah. To export jobs offshore for call centers. And we handled your calls, the calls that you make every day. And that had the law of unintended consequences. And there's a direct relationship between that and the capital flight we see in corporations today, right? So I'm glad that the Lord Almighty, and I'm being a little Baptist when I say that, I'm glad the Almighty is pretty patient with me, because I got my butt kicked in that process. I got my butt kicked in that business in early 2008. And I landed in a world of personal and professional hurt. And I began to question, as Tisa can attest to, I began to question everything. And for members of the God group, Peggy Alter, Anne Marie, Linda Benson, and others, began to question everything. And I realized after a lot of soul searching and a lot of conversations with people like you and teachers up the hill at Holy Names, that all business is personal. And I couldn't separate who I was and who I was called to be from what I did anymore. So now I blame what's happening on you, dear congregation. It's been 6 years since I started that journey in earnest, and I've got 2 more years to get my doctorate at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland. To simplify things, for the last couple years, I've been flying back and forth to Ohio every couple weeks. And it's gotten pretty expensive, and it's gotten pretty complicated, and it's been hard on our relationship, it's been hard on our family. And so I'm going home to my childhood home. And the simple truth of what I'm called to do is to change the nature of corporations, because business has suffered from believing that there's a separation of head and heart, and from values and ideas. And if you think that modern business has prospered from that efficient dispatching of emotions, values, hopes and dreams, you're wrong. Because the half-life in the American corporation has declined from the turn of the century at 65 years to 17 years today. And that's according to Paul Adler at University of Southern California and others who study the corporate form. And that's more than can be explained by creative destruction as taught in classical economics. Furthermore, you've got employee engagement that it's at its lowest levels ever. You've got tenure of employees that work at companies. The tenure for an average employee at a company is 60% less than 15 years ago. It really represents a sea change. Something's wrong. And I'm not going to lecture you what you already know, because Lord knows you've taught me to question the practices of big business, the values, ethics, and what the current practices are doing to our world in their most malevolent incarnation. So it's time to heal the corporate heart. And I'm no therapist, I'll vouch for that. But I'm researching alternate forms of leadership and models for organizational behavior that I think offer more sustainable value and do both good in the world and offer an experience for those who work there that isn't soul-sucking. and doesn't have to be. So I don't know what's next after school, but I'll be looking for academic appointments specifically to launch a new kind of executive education program, leadership development at the business school level, that teaches our next generation of leaders how to be successful by doing good in the world and leading with both their heads and their hearts. And that's what I'm called to do. Thank you.